Hello and welcome to the very first podcast for Road Less Travelled. My name is Ben Farrell and I'll be your guide for the next 30 minutes. Really excited to be finally doing a podcast. I guess what I love about the concept of Road Less Travelled and having a blog site and the photography is essentially telling a story. You know, we've covered a lot over this year alone in terms of different topics, some of the most stunning destinations to visit in the world. And, you know, there's always a story behind places, behind cultures, behind people. And, you know, I think photos do a lot to tell that story. You know, there's the cliche that a picture tells a thousand words, but it's true. And I think when you combine photography with experiential writing, you know, you do get an immersive experience of what it's like to be in that situation. But I wanted to take it further. You know, essentially the love of storytelling and discussion and the sense of community that we have now on roadlesstravel.me, I felt it was time to try and do something more than just words on a page or images on the screen. So without further ado, here we are. Welcome. So what can we expect in these podcasts? I guess what I envisage to do is to tackle some of the topics that have come up and have been part of roadlesstravelled.me over the last 12 months and delve a bit deeper into that. I've got some really great inputs and emails from readers who have told me their own personal stories and experiences. So I wanted to sort of use those stories and share them as well to try and enrich, you know, the topic that we're going to set out to explore. So in this episode, I'm going to tell you a bit about me as Ben Farrell, who I am and why I'm coming to you now in a podcast and how Road Less Travelled started. I then want to, I guess, it wouldn't be episode one without talking about the infamous Apple article. But I don't want to talk about Apple as such. I want to use that article as a framework to discuss workplace culture. And as part of that, I want to share with you some really lovely emails that I've received. I've received several thousand emails from readers after that article telling me about their experience and how they feel trapped wherever they are in a toxic organization somewhere in the world. Started writing blogs as far back as I can remember. You know, to me, travel is one of the most important things a human being can do. I really believe, and I hear stories from readers and people I meet all over the world about, you know, what they were like as an individual before travel. You know, maybe scared, naive, suffering from anxiety, depression, you know, not willing to try new things. And how they are post-travel, once they do experience the world and experience different cultures. You know, to me, it really unclutters the lens in which we view the world and shifts your perspective to understand that our way, my way of living, is only one amongst many, many different ways to live in this world. So, you know, I first went overseas back in 2000. I booked a ticket to Thailand. My mum and my grandparents lived in Thailand for a time, so I was brought up on green curries, a love for chili, and a respect for Thai culture. But, you know, I expected to touch down in Bangkok and see streets lined with beautiful Thai restaurants, with Buddha carvings on the walls, and soothing Thai music that wafted out from these high-class places. It wasn't until I touched down on that sweaty, orange, polluted Siam sunset afternoon in Bangkok with, you know, thousands upon thousands of people commuting. You know, I remember getting the train from the airport into the city centre and looking out the window, and it was as if I was seeing cliched images of Asia presented to me, you know, family gathering around a wok or a barbecue, cooking their meal next to a train track, you know, markets, incredible fresh food, and the air smelled like fish sauce, barbecue, spice. It was incredible, but it was nothing at all what I expected. My next trip would be to Italy in 2003, and I've just written a blog, well, not written, I've published a blog that I wrote when I did this trip. I published part one. It's on my website, roadlesstravel.me. It's called Beyond the Bubble. I was lucky enough to go and study at the University for Foreigners in Perugia in Italy, and you know, it was an amazing experience. But as I was there, I realized that I had this innate urge to want to share my experience with someone, anyone, an audience, a hypothetical, theoretical audience at that stage. You know, I remember wandering around the Venice canals and going to these amazing sites and literally narrating in my head how I would describe this to an audience, how I would write about this. You know, this was the pre-blog era, as far as I knew, and all I could do is sit in the internet cafes and send emails back to my family back in Australia and write about my experiences. And I wrote these big, long, lengthy emails, and I realized essentially what I was doing then is travel writing. And that's kind of when this passion, this desire to share my experience with others really came from. And you know, when I say share, I mean it in a true sense. I don't mean to update Facebook status or to, you know, check in at the Colosseum. Yes, I've done that. I've been horrendously guilty of check-ins at some of the most famous icons in the world. But that's not what I mean. I have this desire, this urge to narrate, to tell, to describe in a way that you know, allows others to feel as if they're there actually with me. So that's kind of where this began, and it wasn't until I went back to Italy, it wouldn't be until 2009, it says, when I actually started a blog. I had a WordPress site and I started blogging under benfarrell.com back then, and that then became Road Less Travelled. Year to date, we've had over half a million views to Road Less Travelled since January this year and counting. So it's been a great year, a lot of support from you guys, from the audience, and a lot of great conversation that comes through emails or the forums or comments on all of the blogs. So thank you. So I guess what really took off this year, obviously, was the Apple article in April this year, or prior to that. Start from the beginning. I worked for Apple. I worked managing their customer service for their tech support contact centers across the Asia Pacific. I worked there for 2 years, and it finally became too much. I finally had to get out. And for reasons which I detail in the blog that I wrote back in May this year, which is titled I Quit, What Really Happens at Apple. Now I have to say that I really did not expect that article to go so viral. I am so surprised that others, or no, not many others, have spoken out about the Apple culture and gone on the record, so to speak, and actually written about their experience. So I did. So, you know, without going into details, I wrote a blog about what I deemed to be a toxic culture, and a culture that was so incongruent to my perception of Apple prior to working there. And, you know, that perception came from Steve Jobs, what I understood about him as a man, what I understood about from reading his biography. You know, his famous speech at Stanford University talks about not allowing yourself to be involved in, you know, entrenched dogma and limited thinking. And I was shocked that everywhere I turned in Apple, I saw people behaving in ways that completely contradicted and went against what I feel, or the public perception of Steve Jobs is and what he was striving to create. So, you know, understatement of the century, it was a hideous experience. And, you know, that article went viral. It was translated into several different languages. It was published in newspapers, magazines, tech blog sites all over the world. And, you know, it's to this day, I still receive about 3,000 views each day on that article alone. And I've received thousands upon thousands of emails from people who are trapped in toxic workplaces and, you know, I don't know if afraid is the right word, but, well, maybe it is, you know, afraid or not willing to take the step to stand up for what you know is wrong, and actually do something about it. So I wanted to share some of, you know, my favorite emails that I've received from readers from writing that article, that I think capture the general sentiment that, you know, I received from readers after that article. For the purpose of privacy, I've changed the names these emails are from, and I've edited out any information that may be able to distinguish who they are and where they work. Aside from that, the emails are exactly as they've been received. So Jason here says, "Hi Nomadic Rambler, you've made my evening with your article. Your tone and my experience suggested to me that what you've written is true. Keep it up. This kind of experience is mystic and revealing a lot about how this world works. So it's nice to know that you've touched this nasty but truthful thing. Being on one part of the spectrum, you could be sure that the other part is contrary bright." This next one is very interesting. This is from Charlene, who writes, "I've read your story and I feel like I'm in the same weary situation you were in, but in the world of journalism and media. I'm a male journalist in his career infancy, as I'm interning for a big news agency in Germany. Only four people were able to get the chance I'm getting right now, and it's the first time the company have given anyone a chance. Of course, I was happy to be one of the few chosen ones, but I now have less than any support except from one friend who is being worked and mobbed in the most astonishing ways I have ever seen someone being treated. But he has no options. He thinks, since he did not go to college, and he's been there for almost 5 years, that he has no other options to explore. But since I work here as an intern, nobody taught me the things I needed to know, and I had almost no help whatsoever. Long story short, I feel like I'm going to break as the boss, as well as all the other co-workers, let out their anger out on me. I'm sure it's a direct causality from the uncertainty of the print medium, where most of the money flows into the company. I, on the other hand, focus on online journalism, and I try to make the best out of my situation. Still, I feel like I'm working for a company who never acknowledges the work that I'm putting in, and in the end, they're going to kick me anyway. Today was a bad day. As I was being yelled at in front of the whole department for standing up for my opinion in a discussion about the Apple Watch. Ironic. It seems like most of the people follow mainstream thinking, and that in journalism business, that is definitely the case. In college, journalism ethics were the priority, but in real life it seems that money making is the goal and people get fired, no big deal. I don't know if my little story makes sense, but I feel your pain. I haven't even learnt much. How can an instructor say to the intern, you're never going to learn how to write? I'm so desperate and feel like I should follow my heart and do what I love to produce music or find a job where people are not using every minute of their life to make other people's lives harder. Thanks for sharing your story." So, pretty awful story, and that sounds like a pretty awful workplace. Needless to say, This one is from Vicky. Dear Ben, thank you for your article. I'm sorry you had to go through this. This struck a chord with me. I'm so fed up of people with egos running the show. They care more about power trips than anything else. I'm a disabled person who has struggled and worked all my life. I never relied on government help, and I always pushed myself to be normal, in inverted commas. I gave everything I could to my employers, and I have been treated like I don't matter. Because of my disability, I have worked 10 times harder and excelled, and now have more product knowledge than even my own boss. It's so disheartening to give 300% and give everything to a company, but they just show you how expendable you are. It's hard to find work, and even harder to find work and respect as a disabled person. I too stood up for myself and my efforts and told them how I felt. I not only got fired, but I got banned from this company for the rest of my life. I wasn't rude or violent or anything. I just spoke my mind, yet now I'm banned from earning a living. I just wanted to write to you and say good on you for writing the article. I don't feel completely alone now. I just don't understand why people need power trips. Why can't a good employee be recognised for just that? Thank you for the article and being a good human being and a dedicated one at that. So, you know, this is a topic that I'm really passionate about. You know, some people might listen to this as a discussion topic, even listen to these emails and think, well, you know, maybe we're all naive. Maybe these people are naive. Welcome to the real world. It's hard. It's difficult. But, you know, my opinion is that, I'm sorry, when did we lower our standards? Because I missed the memo. When did it become acceptable for people to carry on like bullies and harass and intimidate people? You know, we're taught at a very young age to not tolerate bullies in the schoolyard. So why is it that as soon as we leave school and we enter the workforce that it becomes acceptable again? I don't think that's right at all. I think that, you know, even when I wrote this article and it got published and I read a lot of the press about it, you know, so many journalists were describing this as, oh, you know, someone finally going on the record to speak out against Apple. And, you know, literally, I felt like I'd quit Willy Wonka's chocolate factory where, you know, no one's ever seen going in, no one's ever seen coming out. And it really frustrated me because the language that was being used by the media dripped of this passive awe of this tech giant and, you know, the hold that it has over us. And, you know, I find that really frustrating. You know, these emails that I have from readers, they're not from people that are flipping burgers in McDonald's. They're from people who have studied college degrees for several years in doing internships or very professional people who are simply disappointed at the way people behave. And unfortunately, in industries, particularly creative ones, where, you know, there is a lot of competition, it's almost as if, well, we can do what we like and you have to accept it to, you know, to make the cut. And, you know, I just think that is entirely wrong. You know, I've worked 15 years for many different companies and in many different industries. And yes, I've experienced workplace politics. They exist everywhere you go. Yes, I've experienced immature people. I've certainly experienced my fair share of egos. However, you know, I like to think that I am well calibrated on what is someone on an ego trip versus an organization where it's embedded in their culture, you know, an organization where their actual psyche is to undermine and, you know, to create a culture or an environment where they subconsciously perhaps don't even see themselves as part of the real world anymore. So, you know, I'd like to say firstly, you know, thank you to everyone who's written to me. You know, if you would like to write to me or like to, you know, tell me your story, please head over to roadlesstraveled.me and go to the contact me page and send me an email through there. Remembering, of course, that I am Australian and we spell traveled with two L's, road less traveled. Head over there and love to read your thoughts and read your story. I've been reading a book recently by Gary Zukav, and basically he talks about the soul and then he talks about the personality, and he describes them as if they're almost two different entities. We have this soul, which is the eternal force, this presence that goes from life to life, and then we have the personality, which is the physical form. It's me as Ben Farrell living out my life, going to work. And he speaks about the dangers of not following the desires of the soul. So if the personality doesn't listen to the deep innate callings of the soul and pursues or doesn't pursue things that the soul wants to achieve, a bit deep, sure, okay, but you know, to me it really rang a chord. And I think that, you know, that has been what I've done through a lot of my life, is pursue things that my soul doesn't yearn for. I've always, I think, being a creative person, I've always wanted to pursue creative arts. You know, I wanted to be an actor and a writer. You know, I from the moment I started school, and I think I got caught up in earning money, the world, having to pay bills, that, you know, I got so involved in doing corporate jobs. Now, don't get me wrong, I've done a lot of corporate jobs that are highly creative. You know, I've worked for some really great multinational organizations where my job has essentially been to travel the world to different cultures and educate them on how to deal with Australian customers, how to deal with American customers, how to improve your communication skills, how to build resilience, how to build rapport. And that's what I love, you know. I'm not saying I need to be locked away in some creative space and, you know, typing away on some old typewriter and, you know, some apartment opposite the Moulin Rouge in France. I'm simply saying that I've always enjoyed having the liberty to create something. And, you know, when I read this book, I realized that when I've been the most anxious or the most depressed in life, it's been when I haven't been fulfilling that innate desire. And it's as if, you know, when you go against what you know your soul wants, it's a dangerous space to be in. You know, I've been in jobs, for example, where, you know, I look around the office at 5 p.m. on a Friday evening and I look at people still working, still typing away at emails, still dialing into conference calls, attending meetings, and I think, why am I not like that? What is wrong with me? You know, I'm the one yearning to get home, to work on my photography, to work on my writing, to do what I love and leave my job. And what I realized, which is so simple, and to all of you listening to this, you'll think, well, yeah, but is to just do that as a job, you know, and then maybe I can be one of these people who is happy to stay back when it's required and I don't feel like I'm stuck at work. But, you know, that's easier said than done. But, and, you know, some people might say, oh, well, you know, you got to learn that's, you know, life isn't all, you know, creative, life isn't all, you know, you got to do things you don't like. Okay, sure, you have to do things you don't like, but when you think about the hours that we spend in an office from 9 to 5, 8 hours a day, and it's usually much more than that, for 5 days a week, the majority of our life, we are in an office, we're working. So why on earth does it make sense to spend the majority of your life working at something where you continually watch the clock and wish away your life. It makes no sense to me. You know, I don't know where this came from, but I often imagine that, you know, aliens are watching us. They're kind of, you know, spying on human civilization from another world. And what would they think? And you know, when you become objective and you look at some of the things we do as humans, it is absurd. And one of those things is getting on a bus, a train, or in a car, driving to a building and doing something you ultimately don't enjoy for 8 hours and then leaving and going home. You know, if you are in an environment where you're not doing what you love, where it's not your absolute passion, yet you're forced to conform to a type of behavior where it has to be your life because everyone who is around you has made it their life, it is their passion, that's all they want to do, then it's very hard to make time for things you love. And that's when things get really stressful and really start to break down. And for me, that's what happened at Apple. That's when I realized that I was suffering mentally, physically, in every sense of the word. But I do think that duality is dangerous. And what I mean by duality, it's doing one thing to make money and having a passion for something else. I know it's impossible at times and it's very hard. Trust me, for someone who is trying to make a living out of creative pursuits, I completely understand. And don't get me wrong, I'll be looking for a full-time job probably to make money as well very soon. But that job will be something where I have creative license. It'll be something where I'm able to create something that matters. And if that something is training for contact center agents in the Philippines, then that's great. At least I'm creating something, and that is creative. It's training and teaching another culture. So all I'm saying is that there is a danger in duality. And, you know, as much as life throws us these challenges, we need to do our best to avoid duality at all costs. So, you know, it's been a really interesting time post-Apple since the article. I've been fortunate enough to get some really great work on lots of different projects, writing projects, photography projects, done a lot of great travel. It's been a wonderful time. I am at the point now, though, where I'm looking to go back to a full-time job. And it's challenging, you know. I'm in Sydney, Australia, and after working all these years for multinational organisations who offshore their customer service, I never thought that I personally would be affected by offshoring. But what's happened now, at least in Australia, is my job simply doesn't exist here anymore. So personally, I'm at a point right now in my life where I'm trying to work out the next phase. And it's a challenge. It's difficult because whether it's creative jobs or customer service management jobs, neither one of those really exist in their totality in Australia. Or they do, but it's very difficult to get in there and earn a lot of money. So the options are to look at, maybe we'll move to the Philippines. Might move to Manila, and my wife is from the Philippines. I met her in Manila with all the travel that I used to do there. So it's either we'll move there with our daughter, who's now just 15 months almost, and do one of two things: is either get one of the multiple customer service management roles that are now in the Philippines. You know, maybe we'll move to El Nido, one of the beautiful islands in Palawan, and open a bar, and then I can just write and do my photography. So we'll see. We'll see where life takes us, and who knows, next broadcast, where I may be. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. thanks so much for listening and joining us for this very first podcast from roadlesstravel.me. My name's Ben Farrell. I've really enjoyed your company here today. Join us again next week for a brand new podcast. And until then, just remember, always take the road less travelled. I have, and that has made all the difference. Take care.